Today I have Eric Coverdale from Gorkon Industries with me, and I just wanted to really say hello and welcome you. So we're going to talk a little bit about solar energy and, you know, delve into some of the history in Canada and also talk a little bit about the politics. I think it'd be really interesting. So, you know, last night I was doing my fact-checking before the podcast, and I was shocked to learn that renewables, including solar, had record level of revenues and production last year in Canada. So, you know, I remember, you know, I was trying to think back, what do I know about renewable energy and solar? Well, I was trying to think back when Premier Ford got in Ontario, because we are in Ontario, and we had this cancellation of contracts. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, everyone who had solar farms and windmill farms, you know, seemed to be out of business, and those deals were criticized. And so that kind of, you know, were canceled. And you had the NDP and doing reports, you had the Liberal government supporting it. So it kind of was that roller coaster, you know, as you call it, the solar coaster. Yeah. So, you know, we went through that. And then now, you know, I didn't even know that in 2025, the same government is actually reintroducing solar programs and wind renewable energy programs. So why don't you take us through a little bit of that and kind of that roller coaster and some of the why and the rationale across Canada of what's going on in the solar world?
Sure. Yeah. So energy, you know, as we chatted before, you know, we really started rolling here. Is extremely politicized, I think, because there's just so much money involved in it, right? You end up with this kind of, you know, right-left kind of argument over the best way forward with it. And yeah, whoever's in power kind of wants to rebrand it as their own success story. So a lot of flip-flopping happens. You know, whoever may be in power, you know, there's always kind of something that's not going perfectly with rollout of energy projects. So it's really easy to for someone to attack their political opponents. Yeah. Right, happens every time, doesn't matter, regardless of political stripe. So that is kind of, you know, how it's always going to be, I think. And but the overall story is, you know, renewables are, you know, always going to be here. They make economic sense. You might hear, you know, stories from some people that they're overly subsidized. Yeah. But oil, gas, everything gets some sort of subsidy. So it's really not a level playing field, and it's really a very complex thing to get involved into. So yeah, you know, overall solar is getting cheaper though, that, from a technology standpoint. So that's why I got into solar. I, you know, realized that this was you know, basically a remake of society really is what it boils down to, right? Mm-hmm. You know, our ancestors figured out how to make everything run on oil and gas, and that was not sustainable. So now we're having to go back and redo a lot of things with renewable energies.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So who, out of curiosity, and I was trying to figure this out last night, and you probably know this better than I do, who in Canada as a province does it really well? Like, who is kind of the, who is everyone following as the preeminent solar guru in as far as provincial projects?
Well, I think Alberta really will shine in the future. You know, they're not immune to the whole political, you know, back and forth that everywhere else has had, but they have the biggest opportunity because they have a lot of fossil fuel generation right now, right? So they're the only place in Canada, I believe, that still uses coal plants for electricity generation. So just a big opportunity to take that offline, to reduce their carbon emissions, and ultimately lower their electricity bills too, because, you know, it's, you know, a little bit more money up front to build these renewable plants, but, you know, then you get free solar power after that, right? The, the input costs from the sun shining, you don't have to mine the coal, you don't have to, you know, mine uranium or any of these things. So, yeah, the overall levelized cost of energy, as we say in the industry. So like if you consider, you know, not just the price of producing power, but there's, you know, the price of environmental cleanups and, and whatnot, everything factored in, levelized cost of energy of solar is becoming cheaper than anything else available.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So Alberta, Alberta's kind of the leader. because they need to do it because they're still using coal, right? I get right. that. So they're going to probably transition. And they have the, listen, they have the land and they have the sun. Great, we all have the sun, but quite frankly, they get more daylight. Isn't that, am I wrong on that one?
Yeah, that's actually true as well. They have the best solar resource, right? So just because where they are, like behind the mountains, I guess, you know, the mountains keep a lot of those clouds away. So they're just a very sunny place in Canada. Yeah.
Yeah, when I was out in Calgary, they were telling me, they're trying to get me to move there. And they were telling me, we get the most daylight of anyone. They were very proud of it, the people I was traveling with at the time. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that. So so solar in Alberta, which is kind of weird because if you think about it, you think about oil and gas in Alberta and now you're talking, you know, solar and renewable. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you jump into it. And then what about us in Ontario? Sort of, we've kind of gone full circle. We basically loved it and then we hated it. And then now we love it again. So where are we at now here?
I think it's just coming back online now. So, Doug Ford has been supporting the industry. He's, been making some moves to indicate that this is the case. Quietly, I've been watching legislators put together something that looks like the beginnings of virtual net metering, which will be huge for the industry because that means we'll be able to build a solar generating station, not actually at the place where the power gets used with net metering. Trying to explain this in a way that the layman can understand. So net metering is when you can generate your own power and run your meter backwards when you're not using as much as you generate.
Yes.
And normally this happens on the same facility. So you got to put rooftop solar panels maybe on a warehouse where you're using the power, right?
Right.
But virtual net metering means that you can put that solar panel somewhere else and, basically by accounting, you can say, I generated this much power. So that can come off my hydro bill on this other facility over here. So cool. It just opens up more opportunities for doing these projects, especially in urban areas where deployment of solar panels is more challenging.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was the issue, wasn't it? At one point, I know that they've overcome a lot of that now. It really was the production, the oversupply of energy through the whole grid, right? Like that was I think that was the argument way back when, why to cancel the program, right? Because everyone was saying, you know, we put this program into play for renewables, but we already have so much energy online. What do we do with it all? So why are we doing it, right? And is that true, or is that false, or are we still in that situation?
Yeah. Well, I mean, our power needs are, you know, up and down a little bit too, right? Not just the policy. So it is kind of true that we've needed less energy because there was a lot of deindustrialization happening, in the early 2000s, let's say, in that era.
Yep.
And also switching over to more energy efficient appliances and lighting, that actually did reduce power requirements of the province quite a bit.
Yeah.
But that's all being undone. We've already made all those efficiency gains and we're continuing to grow the population. And now even reindustrialization is causing a need for more power. And EVs is a big one too, right? If everyone's plugging in their electric vehicle, suddenly we need a lot more electricity. Yeah. So, we're out of that whole, we don't need so much power now. And now we really need to aggressively start building more generation and also more infrastructure for distribution. We've been lagging in investment for quite a long time there as well. I'm not a utility guy. I am not the biggest expert on the ways that this is happening, but it's kind of common knowledge that this is the truth right now.
Yeah. It's wild the way the pendulum swings, you know. I remember we have too much energy, and now, quite frankly, with data centers, EV cars, everything else, you know, I think we're looking in this province at a nuclear investment of about $21 billion over the next 5 years, you know, just on nuclear to kind of catch up with what's going to happen and try to stay kind of ahead of that curve. Solar, you know, I've learned so much in the last, you know, little while. Take me through kind of the uses of solar. So the residential projects, commercial projects, because you know, last night I was digging into it too, and I'm like, I build some homes. Like, I like to do that kind of as my hobby, right? So, and I've enjoyed it, but I don't use anything with respect to the solar, you know, technology in those mm-hmm. homes right now. Are you seeing more of it? Is there people doing it? Like where are you seeing it on grid and where are you seeing people doing it?
Yeah. So, net metering on homes is a thing. Anyone mm-hmm. can apply right now in this province to do solar on their home. And, mm-hmm. There is one caveat that, that the industry isn't very happy about, which is that it's not net metering. So what I described before with the virtual net metering,
yep.
really on commercial projects is what I was getting to there, because you would never want to bother with that on a residential scale. What they want to do for residential is load displacement only. So that means you can't run your meter backwards. That means you can only generate power and use it in that instant.
Real time.
Yeah. And I think the reason they don't want to do net metering anymore is because basically you're getting paid for the retail price of power if you're the solar generator, but you kind of freeload on the electricity network because they're still having to supply you power when you need it.
Yes.
So just the there is a valid argument to be made that perhaps. The true value of power that you're generating is a little bit exaggerated, right? Because mm-hmm. if you had solar and a battery together, that's going to cost a lot more than just solar.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of where the industry is right now. This is kind of a Ontario unique thing. I've never seen anywhere else try to say that you can't do net metering. It's only load displacement. But it could very well catch on because utilities are always pushing back, right? There is a valid case to be said. If solar becomes, 50% plus of generation, there's going to be a need for a lot more infrastructure to store that extra energy when we've got an excess production and then redispatch it back out when we do need the power. So that's actually... arguably even more money to build that out than it is to build the solar projects to begin with. So it's a big deal.
And who mm-hmm. take, like, I know your company, you're, mm-hmm. Consulting and developing projects, mm-hmm. who would be doing that? Like, that's my question last night. I was thinking, okay, is it a government entity or is mm-hmm. it private? Is it like, take me through what that would look like and what does it look like in other provinces, the different structures?
Yeah. So, here we have the IESO, the Independent Electricity System Operator, and there's a number of these in North America, and they are responsible for the overall planning and reliability of the electricity system. So from very top down, they make these decisions on how they want to manage their networks, and they are responsible for procuring energy. Mm-hmm. Technically they're supposed to be the real authority on it, but they do take directives from the Ministry of Energy too. So that is the part where it kind of gets murky and why you kind of see these solar programs come and go is because the provincial government, they decide, sometimes they may want to stimulate the economy. So then they do a bunch of green energy projects right at that time instead of actually when the IESO needs the power. So, yeah, that kind of happens too.
And who is that, a private body or is that a public body?
Oh, that would be a Crown corporation.
The
Yes. Okay. IESO.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, and each province has their own.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's actually each and every province. I think they're like Saskatchewan and Manitoba might share one or something like that.
Yeah.
I know in the U.S. There's definitely not so many. A lot of states share their system operators. But for Ontario, it's the IESO. It used to be called the Ontario Power Authority.
I remember.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember. Is there, and the thing that jumped to mind, because, I'm kind of taking you through it. Mm-hmm. Thank you, because you're the expert and I'm learning. And as I'm reading about it, I'm thinking to myself, is this the most efficient way of doing this? Like, so I'm kind of looking at it, I'm saying, okay, solar power, I get it. I like the idea, it makes sense to me, it does the sun and everything going on. Is it structure of having government bodies actually oversee it? Because you have all the nuances, like you said, you have ups and downs based on economy, based on politics, based on who lobbies the hardest. you know, are there countries, and the thing that came to mind, are there countries that are doing it better under different structures than us? And is there something we can learn from them? Like if you had to look at the world and say, okay, you know, that's a model that's mm-hmm. really cool. And anyone jump to mind?
Well, China is definitely leading in deployment of energy projects, all kinds of energy projects. Yeah. So, you know, their approach is getting it done for sure. I think, you know, there's nowhere with, you know, that much growth that's demanding that much energy. So, you know, it's kind of happening out of necessity. And yeah, who knows? It gets kind of complicated just in our own turf, right? Without trying to compare apples to oranges to other countries. But China is definitely doing a good job in deploying energy projects. There's no argument that that they're the leader in renewable deployment. Although I think the U.S. was also deploying at a very rapid pace. I think they were maybe neck and neck for a couple of years there. For solar deployment, but overall, yeah, nothing really compares to what China's doing. Not saying that they're doing it in a good way. I think they could be fouling things up in a lot of different ways too that you don't hear about. But if you just look at how much is getting deployed, yeah, they're doing a lot.
Technology, is it their technology? Is it their innovation? Or is it just the fact that they've committed?
Yeah, I think it's really... the demand is there, so they need to meet that demand. And there's a political will to grow the country, and energy projects aren't vilified there. It's, you know, everyone wants to see these happen, right? It's not like Canada where there's always this NIMBYism, not in my backyard. Yeah. So they don't have to deal with that. So it's a combination of all these factors coming together.
That still exists, right? Like people still don't want the panels and they're still against it, are they?
Oh, yeah, very much so. A lot of energy projects get this, even small scale ones. You know, a lot of folks would be complaining about, you know, the way it affects their views. It seems like for energy projects, these things get a lot of consideration, more so than, let's say, real estate developers. I'm not sure why that is. Maybe it's not even true. I'm not in real estate, so I don't know what they have to go through to get their projects done. But
I know wind turbines, like, good luck, right? Mm-hmm. Like, everyone argues about a wind turbine. You throw one up and everyone's upset. Solar panels, yeah. In Ontario, I'm trying to think of where I've seen a very large solar field recently, mm-hmm. probably in the West, right?
Yeah, if you get outside of Toronto a little bit, you start to see more of them. Yeah, like out by Sarnia, there was a really big one that just got built.
That's the one I'm thinking about.
Yeah. Haldimand County had a really big one that went in, I want to say maybe 6-7 years ago now. They replaced a coal-fired generating plant there in Nanticoke. It used to be the world's dirtiest generating station.
I remember.
I think there was a consortium of international countries or NGOs, or I'm not sure who did it, but yeah, they were all... up in arms over that because, you know, it was so bad. Like, and this pollution was floating right over Toronto, right? Because they're right upwind of us.
Oh yeah.
But like even in Germany, like their air quality was being affected by that place. So
really,
it was really dirty.
Oh wow. Yeah. It's like our wildfires, but worse.
Yeah,
worse.
Yeah. Now our wildfires have replaced that. So yeah Canada's, stepping back up again on that front.
Yeah, unfortunately. So blue sky with me for a minute. So you know, I want to get you, you know, when you wake up in the morning and you say, okay, you know, I'm going to go consult on a solar project, where do you see it going? Like, I was trying to figure that out too. I'm thinking, okay, we've kicked around. So solar's been, give me kind of the origin year where solar really hit the mainstream.
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking from an Ontario perspective, centered perspective, 2009 is when that Green Energy Act happened in the province. It was kind of a economic stimulus program as much as it was energy procurement program. And they wanted to create a market to be world leaders in renewable energy.
I remember.
In some senses, they succeeded, although sustained policy would have been a lot better than what we ended up having. But yeah, there was a lot of projects being built. It was very straightforward on how to build the project and get a a firm contract for a 20-year period in this case to sell the power. So anyone investing felt reasonably confident in doing so. It was very de-risked.
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely more lucrative than it needed to be. They were paying quite high premiums. At the time, it felt that was necessary to really
get
have uptake
into it. Yeah.
Because it was unproven technology and still people felt they were doing a risk to build these projects. But those risks were very overblown and a lot of people that got in early did very well with that.
Mm-hmm. I remember, yeah. You know, it's funny. I remember mm-hmm. guys calling me and saying, you got to come yeah. with me. And we jump in the car and we go out to farms all across Ontario and they'd show me these, you know, plans to do mm-hmm. solar fields. And you know what I mean? And you got to invest, right? And mm-hmm. so there was a lot of discussion back then, which a lot of it came to fruition, you know, which right after that, it was the next big craze was cannabis. You know, everyone mm-hmm. was calling me, get in my car, let's go. And then you'd have solar field, cannabis field, you know, your cannabis warehousing. And
yeah,
it was interesting in the time sort of how those projects came, but similar kind of bouncy road, right?
Well, I don't know if you could compare solar to cannabis with being fair to the solar industry. Cannabis, that was, a really crazy thing. Definitely a lot of people, I think, overestimated the demand.
Yeah, yeah. Totally speculative, right? Just mm-hmm. grow it and they will come. Whereas mm-hmm. solar, you know, just I don't think it got its fair shake. I think it just, mm-hmm. you know, it got off the ground and then it got canceled, really, right? It got, mm-hmm. 10 years in? Got a clean decade?
How long did it run? Something like that, 2009 to 2008. I want to say 8 or 9 years it really went.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's no one stopping you from building a solar project right now, but, you know, with all other energy forms being subsidized, there's not much of a business case for it, right? If you go places like Germany, they've got high levels of solar uptake because they don't subsidize other industries. So you end up with a higher price for power. So these projects have, you know, a good business case without any subsidy because no energy is subsidized. This is what Elon Musk was really pushing for in the US. He wanted to have no subsidies for any energy. Because all you do when you do that is you shift the price of power from the ratepayer to the taxpayer.
Yes.
Right. And who wants to pay high taxes, right? Like I'd rather just be upfront paid on my power bill.
Yeah, exactly. Usage. Yeah. So it's a usage tax really is what he was vying for, right? Versus an income tax.
Yeah. Well, it's a subsidy is what Elon wanted to do away with. And
what's your thoughts on that?
I think it would overall be good. I think there's a bit of short-term pain when you do something like that because a lot of people have been depending on low costs of electricity and they'll start to see those prices go up. But, you know, we're in a crisis of being overtaxed right now too. So it's like there's no free lunch, right? Like do you want to pay it on your tax bill or on your power bill?
But it sure takes that skew away from what type of power you're going to use. To your point, because in order to get, you know, by subsidizing one, you end up subsidizing all. And it's funny, solar took a real big knock for being fully subsidized. I think that probably the Ontario program, and I only see it from this perspective because I live here, right? But, you know, we kind of said, oh, you know, solar, that was a bad deal for the taxpayer. You know, we paid everyone too much. We made a bunch of guys rich. Thank God it's done. And then we all walked away, right? Whereas, you know, probably a bad shake for solar at the time because it wasn't solar. It was just maybe the math that they did that was off, to your point, is too, and maybe not the greatest contract, right? And they could have done a better way of contracting for those guys. But the right idea to get it started, I think, just wasn't executed great and it took a knock. But I'm glad it's back. So Blue Sky, so now we're moving forward. Where do you see solar going? Give me kind of that decade, two-decade look ahead where you see solar kind of like, where am I going to be looking at solar in 10 years?
Well, yeah, solar's not going anywhere. It's going to be here. The question is how much is there going to be and what's the energy mix going to be? Because solar, you know, as a lion's share of of all of our energy, it's gone from like less than 1% to something much more meaningful very quickly.
Yeah, it's like 8 or something now.
Yeah. I'm not even sure what that percentage may be on a pie chart, but yeah, it's getting up there. And it's going to take, policy. Like right now in Ontario, they're wanting to build a lot more nuclear plants. Mm-hmm. So that's going to shrink the share of solar if they stick with that policy. I would like to see them, build more solar and batteries because I just think it's safer and I think it's actually cheaper to do that. When you consider the whole life cycle cost of nuclear, because there's all kinds of costs, once these projects are decommissioned, right, that don't really get baked into the levelized cost of energy, right?
Of course not.
And who pays for that, right? Usually taxpayers or, environmental degradation, other all kinds of things. Externalized costs, we call them in the industry. So that's the one thing about solar, why I think people think it's expensive, because it's very transparent about what the real cost is, right? And you don't end up with all these other
hidden back-end costs.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, it's interesting. So in 10 years from now, so say we, if we can get solar online, what type of projects, so am I looking at? Am I looking, when you say batteries, give me a feel for what type of solar batteries we'd be looking at.
Yeah, so just big energy storage facilities, right? Like Tesla Energy is a big part of Elon's company right now. And it's less talked about because it's kind of boring in comparison to the robots and other things. But they're going to be very busy deploying basically big batteries on the grid that can charge when there's more power than we need and discharge when we need the energy back. So these storage projects, they don't need to be together with a solar project. We can, have transmission lines between them.
Right.
But basically these projects are going to be needed to allow for the adoption of more renewables. So a lot more storage projects coming online with renewables together, that's definitely going to happen. It's just the proportion of how much of that are we going to have versus nuclear or natural gas or other things.
Right.
That's going to be up to politicians to decide.
Yeah. Well, it looks like here we kind of are committing into the nuclear field, right? Like we so far we've kind of made a statement that we're going to go nuclear and basically natural gas. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know where that's going, quite frankly. Those guys, are they disappearing or what's happening? I have no idea. They're very quiet. And then solar, to your point, Elon and the stuff he's doing sort of in Nevada and out in the US right now, it's pretty cool. Do you see something like that happening here?
So like a big, what he's doing in Nevada, like a gigafactory. So I think what you're talking about is this gigafactory where they are building batteries. I think for both his energy business and for the vehicles.
Yeah.
So yeah, these gigafactories, they'll be popping up everywhere, right? There's so much demand for it. It's hard to imagine that going away anytime soon. There was kind of a glut in the price of lithium for the last couple of years. I think that's just because, like the cannabis industry or anything else we've been talking about, right? There was, everyone was over-investing into production for a while and it's going to kind of go back the other way. Maybe there's under-investment now. I read just recently that they took a big mine offline in China for lithium production because of the way prices are, but they'll bring it back when the market's there. Sure. So this is just how these markets work, right? It's supply and demand. They need to balance each other. It takes time for it to balance.
And aren't we, Canada, resource wise, my understanding is we're totally set up for solar, right? As far as resources to create these plants and to create, whether it be lithium or any of the other minerals. Is that, am I correct? Are we missing something that we need to?
Yeah, I think we've got pretty much every kind of resource in this country, right? It's just what's the willingness to develop those resources?
And the reason we came across you for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons was your expertise, right? So, what is the brain trust in Canada right now for solar energy? Like, are people leaving? Are they staying? Are they finding it a place they want to work? Like what's happening kind of in your industry for human resources? Because that's always, as Canada being the size of country we are, you know, I have lots of conversations with people and they're really good ones, but so they always kind of lead down that path to, you know, but those people are leaving and going to the US, or, you know, or they came from China, they're heading back, or, you know, how are you finding it in your industry right now for people?
Right now, I think Canada is an okay place to be for solar, definitely less hostile to solar energy than what they're experiencing in the US. So Trump is actually retroactively canceling a lot of renewable energy projects there. So that's not happening, you know, at least politically, there is a will to maintain, you know, a strong solar industry here. You know, there's other economic factors at play here. And, you know, are these, is the industry supported adequately enough? I'm not really sure, but, it's okay in Canada right now overall. The question is, you know, how are these projects being built, right? Is it like a free market, or is this like, you know, Brookfield Renewable getting all the projects? That's kind of, you know, what's questionable about how things are being done.
Well, that's always the case here, right? Small country, right? So that sometimes the power source gets consolidated too. U.S. versus Canada. Let's talk about that, because, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned Trump, and I was going to get to that, but let's jump into it for a few minutes. So he's going another direction, obviously. He's kind of made that statement, you know, solar, renewables, you know, he wants to go kind of oil, gas, you know, the other way. So what's your thought on sort of what he's doing? And is there any opportunity for us out of that? So is there, you know, as they go one direction, is there opportunity for us?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, renewables are the future, and, you know, EVs to a large extent are the future too. You know,
well, we committed, right? We built those plants up in by Windsor and London.
Right. We've got to be our own customer now, right? Is what they say. So
60 billion or something. And they're built, right?
So, I mean, it for sure is a good idea to go to renewables, right? Fossil fuels are just not sustainable over the long term. So, you know, this transition needs to happen. What's maybe debatable is how aggressively does this transition need to happen, because it is a costly transition. And in Canada, for a lot of people, it feels like they're too aggressively pursuing it. So I think that's a very valid thing.
We're still online. I just heard the other day for 2035 for our EV and car targets. So they never disappeared, right? So that all sort of stayed in play.
Yeah. I think it might even be 2030, actually.
Oh, is it? Oh, wow.
Yeah, if I'm remembering correctly. But maybe
I was wishing for five more years.
It could be tiered. It could be, you know, so many by 2030 and then another, you know, down to zero by 2035. I can't remember which. But the mandates are something that the Trump, very much as a populist kind of guy, I think that's how he garnered a lot of support, right? Nobody likes these mandates.
Yes.
They'd rather have the choice to get an electric car, right? So, you know, when you're out shopping for an electric car, if you think that EV is the best choice for you and your family, then you buy it. That's kind of, you know, how most people like to make their decisions, right? They like to be in control of their own lives and not have the government controlling them. So, that's kind of what they're doing in the States right now versus Canada. It seems like we're kind of complacent to be a little bit more controlled by the government.
I agree with you. I think smaller, you know, we small ball here, little smaller nation, of course, a lot smaller. So I think we sometimes go there. But I think, you know, with this solar opportunity and even with the EV opportunity, there's a great opportunity. It's just how do we seize it, produce it, and also keep it efficient enough to survive through it. And that's the challenge right now that we have. You know, what can we be doing better on the solar field right now? Like, so if you had to kind of give us a recommendation for our country, give us kind of the 3 to 5 points that if you were, say, I said, you know, Eric, you know, you're the prime minister tomorrow, right? What would you do to the solar industry that would actually move it forward?
Well, that's definitely a complicated answer, right? You know, definitely haven't got like three, you know, prioritized things to approach it with. But, there's a pretty strong industry association, the Canadian Solar Industries Association, CanREA, renewables, actually, it's wind and solar together. So they've got some really good policy suggestions that they're always putting forward. And sometimes they are adhered to and sometimes not. So,
and who makes up this group?
Yeah, they're a, like a non-government organization, an NGO. An industry association.
Industry. Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Great. Yeah. So you guys are in it. There's a bunch of other guys who belongs like the.
Yeah. Like any, you know, solar company, you know, they may be a member and there's even like individual members, right?
Okay. Good.
Who make it up. And, you know, there's a small number of people who work there full time. A lot of people kind of on boards, you know, volunteering, that kind of thing to come up with this policy.
Yeah.
And anytime that the government does something, you know, there's a lot of people in industry, they're always, you know, suggesting that there's something wrong with this policy, it needs to change. So, you know,
they're like the lobbyists. I hate that. I'll use lobbyists for a minute. They're kind of the solar lobbyist group.
Yeah. They do lobby for the solar industry.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need it. And then, you know, so they create kind of the mandates that move it forward. So through the industry, they collect and then they come up with kind of the plans to move it forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do you think their number one mandate would be right now for the government?
Yeah. Well, adequate support for the industry, you know, with, you know, the proper subsidies and, you know, the proper, you know, things that prevent these projects from getting strangled in red tape. Mm-hmm. So that happens a lot too. There might be a project that looks feasible, but then can never happen because of some connection issue, right? Getting connection on the grid is a big problem. And that problem is everywhere. So that's not Canada. That's, you know, wherever in the world you go. Because, you know, obviously more important than the solar industry is power reliability, right? We all want to be able to walk into a room and turn the lights on and not be like,
oh yeah,
what's up with this power outage? So, yeah, energy reliability is here, and ensuring that we've got the energy reliability for economical prices for the power. These are kind of like priority one and two. And then, you know, are we getting clean, sustainable power is never going to be more important than that. So, you know, with respecting one and two, you know, we want to have clean, sustainable power too. That's going to,
yeah. You know, it's interesting, you know, when you talk about energy in Canada, I'm always kind of, I'm torn a little because I always wonder why we pay so much. Like we're so, you know, we're population wise, we're a small country. Land wise, we're a huge country, right? Second biggest landmass in the world to Russia, right? We have resources out the wahoo, but yet we still seem to pay kind of, you know, market rates for our energy costs, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's oil, gas, whether it's, you know, nuclear, whatever we do, we seem to charge this huge exorbitant price to do it. And I'm always wondering, are we losing our competitive advantage by, like, you know, if we could drop down and actually produce things cheaper and actually become a country that you could come here and do things cheaper, would we not be getting the advantage of that? You know, and so, you know, when you bring up that, it's like solar costs and that, like, is it a great opportunity for us to actually kind of reset the bar in Canada to get our energy costs at a decent level so we can actually attract more people to come here?
Sure. Yeah. Like good energy policy that works for everybody is the best way to do that. And, you know, here in Ontario, we've got kind of average power prices. Actually, it's really not that expensive here. And if you go other places in Canada, like in BC, Quebec, they've got much cheaper than global averages for electricity. So, you know, the truth is we do have cheap energy in Canada. So that's giving us a competitive advantage. I think it could be managed better, sure, but same could be said of anywhere. It's not all bad. You know, things are still pretty good in Canada and things are going all right on a lot of fronts. There's just always, you know, ways we can improve still.
Well, I know your reliability, you know, your first one is power reliability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I run a couple of businesses in the GTA right now, and I'm struggling with one on the east side, right?
Mm.
And so that's become a major thing to keep our business running with, you know, power shortages, power outages, things like that. So, you know, that's become something that's become kind of paramount in that discussion of our business strategy. Which it wasn't a few years ago, right? So, which is very interesting that we're now having that conversation again, which again, you know, brings me back to alternative sources of power, which I think is great that you're, you know, the industry is doing so well. but can we keep growing it? Can we keep advancing it? Because, you know, if I have to bring up more backup power generation to keep my plant moving, then that makes me start to think that the grid isn't as stable as I thought it was, right? And I'm finding that now. So it's something I didn't find, you know, before COVID. I was kind of not thinking about it as much. Now I'm thinking about it more, right? And, you know, good for the guys who do backup generation, bad for the guys who have to get it and pay for it and keep it and maintain it. So, you know, I'm happy, you know, that solar is doing well. I'm happy the industry is thriving. And, you know, I wanted to thank you for coming in today and having this discussion. You know, I'd like to do one just before you go. I'd like to do a session with you where maybe we just dissect kind of, you take us through a little of kind of solar and kind of the history of how solar kind of came to be and, you know, the invention of it and how it works, the technical aspects of it. Because, you know, before we started talking about, you know, solar and, you know, all the how it was kind of developed and invented. And I think, you know, that's kind of really good for Canadians to understand. And hopefully we get some time to do that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, we'd love to talk about that sometime.
Thanks, Eric. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you for having me.